Good morning. Today is Tuesday, August the 7th. Joining us this morning, noted CPA Bill McCauley.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Okay. Were you cold?
You know what? I am.
You're spending a little too much time over in the valley.
I've been warmer than I am today. So yeah, I am a little cold. It's kind of funny because usually I kind of have the constitution that, you know, I'm kind of a wear a t-shirt and Eureka type of guy.
Right.
You know, I mean, on the weekends right. All the time, you know, but... Yeah, I've got a jacket and it's half zipped up. So yeah, and my hands are in my pockets.
I fear that it's an age-related event. So I'm kind of digging my feet in a little bit.
I have so many age-related events right now. How much time do you have? How long is this program anyway?
How do we isolate?
I've got a lot of those going.
Let's see if we can come up with something here. Now I've never even heard about that one. How did an assassin get that name?
Isn't that I think that's a term from the Middle East, and it's Hassassi. Anyway, I think the derivation is from the something. I think it starts. It's a lot like assassin, but it starts with an H. Is that right?
Go ahead, read it. It's right where your fingers are there.
Yeah,
you're the first one that's gotten close to any of these so far.
In the year 1090 AD, Hasan ibn al-Sabah formed a secret Mohammedan sect in Persia, which. During the Crusades, terrorized Christians in its systemic secret murders. The murders were committed by members of the band while under the influence of hashish, and the Arabian word for hashish eater is hashishin. The ruler of this order of assassins had the absolute power over all of its members and was called the Old Man of the Mountain, possibly from the fact that he made his headquarters on Mount Lebanon. So I kind of knew it, but
how'd you know that?
I couldn't articulate it very well. So,
not only why do we say it, how did you know it?
I don't know. I'm full of useless information. Ask my wife.
Good. Yeah. Well, see how well you bat next month. That'll be when old age sets in just a little bit more. Will have set in a little bit more. Yeah. Hopefully you remember to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did miss one. Was it last year?
Yes. It was an interesting comment I heard over the weekend in one of the shows that the stock market had increased 40% since President Trump has been in office. And then it went on to further discussion. But I thought 40% increase, that's got to be causing a lot of changes in estate planning. In tax planning, in all that kind of stuff that you love to swim in, what are some of the basics out of that that we should be kind of considering or at least reflecting on?
Well, there's you mentioned two different arenas. One of them is the income tax side, which it does. You know, the rising valuations do create issues from the income tax perspective. And then it also does create potentially some issues in a very changing environment relative to estate planning. So there are both arenas where the rising market does have implications for planning. And we do try to clients, you know, in general, you know, most of the taxpayers we work with, a big percentage of them don't like surprises. And so...
Not even pleasant ones, because that means you missed it going down the trail
Well, I mean, a pleasant surprise is better than an unpleasant surprise. Clearly.
On the scale,
yeah,
you betcha.
Clearly. But yes, people don't, you know, they kind of like to know what's coming down the road. Now, are they willing to pay to have another meeting to find out? That depends on people's appetites. But and sometimes, you know, we have surprises. You know, we sit down with a client and we're working with in a tax return in March and something happened the year before, and you know, it ends up being a surprise because the taxpayer didn't think about maybe what the implications were of what was going on. But yeah, we try to work with people who are interested in not having undue surprises. You know, planning is generally a little challenging just because you have to make assumptions, and inevitably some of those assumptions aren't correct. And so you're saying, okay, what's a worst case, what's a best case, and kind of what can we do in between to make sure we try to describe both the best case and the worst case so that people can understand, okay, depending on these other changes. And sometimes, you know, we'll meet with somebody and they'll say nothing else is changing except this one item, and then you get to this end of the situation and go, Well, maybe a few other things.
Or the tentacles really go long. Yeah. So with the stock market, which, you know, for some it might change their standard of living, but for others it could be just a, you know, it's like the housing value going up or down. Okay, until you sell the house, it really doesn't matter a hell of beans.
Right.
But somewhere it's registered that it's worth more if somebody takes a look-see. Is that kind of what we're looking at with some of these issues, is that it's, I think your phrase is porpoising?
Yeah, the market can be.
Which is a cool analogy. Yeah. I mean, I got that one.
Yeah, and we did have some interesting, earlier this year, the market really did porpoise. You know, we had a lot of those days where all of a sudden the market would be down a chunk and, you know, 2 or 3%, and then, you know, or whatever the number was, and then boom, the next, you know, 2 or 3 days would be back, you know, or a week later it would be back up. And so we did see those market, that volatility in the markets. It seems a little less volatile right now. But I'm not sure. I can't tell you why. I'm not. You know, that's not really my expertise. But yeah, those most people don't. You know, unless you're day trading, you're probably not overreacting to market changes, because we all know that. You know, I mean, I think if you have assets in the stock market, you realize that there's going to be changes in volatility and things going up and down.
You might smile or sleep a little bit better tonight.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to look and go, hey, the statement, you know, look, it's up.
Bumped a little bit,
You know, it, unless you're going to take a specific action, it's a lot like the house example.
So any tax implications because of that?
Can be. There certainly can be, and it's more likely to be than with a house.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are Easy Radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill McCauley. Bill, when the market goes up, or any, I guess, passive form of investment that has increased value, one thing with the stocks is that there's a dividend annual triggering something if it's going in one direction. So you can't just say, well, we'll worry about it when we sell blank,
right?
Like property. Yeah. But I suppose the assessment goes up a little bit, but it's not to the extent that we're talking about with a 40% bump. What are some of the things? Where are our checkoffs? What should we be looking at?
Well, keep in mind, it depends on how you own your. If you're invested in stocks, you know, you may be doing it several ways. One of the ways you may be doing it is by buying the individual stock. And so that means you have a holding of X number of shares of XYZ company. And in that case, you can either choose to hold them personally and collect any dividends and have the checks sent to you, or direct direct deposited for you, or you can put them in a brokerage account and have most people, I'm assuming, an increasing percentage of people are less interested in all the work that's involved with that, and they will typically have a brokerage account. And there's a continuum of choice when you go with brokers, in terms of, you know, from online brokers up to full service brokerages, and they all have different philosophies, and it's all incumbent upon us to meet with people and understand what the philosophy is, to try to match our philosophy with somebody that we think is going to do a good job for us. But so, you know, if on the assumption it's in a brokerage account, then what happens is the broker collects the dividends, and the broker if there's any sales or transactions, and those will be reported to you for tax purposes at the end of the year. And so all that comes on a kind of a combined 1099 package, which is really important to head off and collect. Now, if you own the stocks individually, you got to get 1099s for each one of those stocks, for the dividends and maybe for any shares that are sold or fractional shares that might be sold. So it depends on facts. So there is some stuff you have to do just for income tax purposes. Now, keep in mind, if within your stock portfolio or within your portfolio, you have mutual funds instead of stocks, so you may buy, a mutual fund that covers a certain market, then what happens there is a little harder to plan for, simply because the mutual fund will pay out dividends based on its dividend policy, and it will also, towards the end of the year, it will pay out any accumulated capital gains that the fund has, and they do that typically in December. So your planning window is relatively tight for that in terms of, sometimes your broker can kind of assess what they think these funds are going to do based on what their anticipation of the capital gain dividend is going to be.
Well, you can anticipate a little bit.
Yeah. But it's volatile. Depending on the market and depending on whether they needed to create more cash in the fund to buy out other interests or whatever, there can be, the capital gain dividend, the capital gain distribution can porpoise, for lack of a better term. It can be bigger, it can be lower, and it can move around, which makes it a little hard to plan for income tax purposes.
So if you play the end where you're going to get a higher return and it comes in lower, okay, you've kind of set yourself up so lesser surprise. Might be a disappointment, but a lesser surprise.
Yeah, and typically what we do with, a typical taxpayer will kind of make assumptions if they're paying estimated tax, making estimated tax payments to make sure that they're paying taxes on this type of income. They probably are basing, in general, they probably are basing their estimated taxes on the previous year's tax. There is an exception for that, either the 100% or 110% of the prior year's tax, depending on your income level.
But as you have a 40% bump, if you're riding along just
you
average,
may not have enough paid in to cover the tax. But generally, we try to work with clients to make sure they're penalty protected, so they can't have a penalty for not having paid in enough. So as the market runs up, the other thing that happens is you may get capital gain distributions in your portfolio. And you may know, hey, we're going to get a big one out of the XYZ fund. And we know we're going to have a $20,000 capital gain distribution out of this fund. Well, then sometimes brokers will be working with their clients saying, hey, are there some loss positions that we have in the portfolio that we can look at to say, maybe we'll harvest a few losses to offset that gain and try to bring it closer into a balance so that the tax surprise is less surprising. Is not so bad.
Now, what about with estate planning? Have there been changes with the federal or the state laws also regarding estate planning or inheritance fees and things of that nature that should be taken into account this year?
Well, sort of indirectly. We had a new tax law that passed in December of 2017. As part of that new tax law, the estate tax exemption amount basically doubled for people. So now someone who had an exemption of a little over $5 million for estate tax purposes, or $5-point-something million, is now at basically $11 million, very rounded numbers, that their estate can have and have no estate tax. So certain, depending, we're talking about a relatively smaller subset of people that are impacted, but they do need to be aware of these changes.
It's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill McCauley. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, and American Ag Credit. Bill, looking at some of the surprise avoidance techniques, as we're kind of mid-season now, unless we hit it big at the horsey races next week or at one of the gaming facilities, we probably have a pretty good sense of where we're going to end up this year. I mean, there may be some fluctuation, but you have a general sense. Does it take a major event to trigger those surprises that you were alluding to, or can they be a series of little nibbles on the heel by the ducks that can set you up for problems?
It can be, yeah, it can be.
Sticking yes. in the animal kingdom.
Yes, you can definitely have it be, it can be major things that cause it. It can be minor, it can be, you know, a couple of minor things or a bunch of little things that can all have a change. This year, you know, one of the things that I guess I would want to, the seed I would want to plant is that when the new tax law occurred in December, in February of 2018, the withholding tables changed. And what that was intended to do was to get the amount to get funds back in the hands of taxpayers rather than have larger accumulations of withholding. The idea being get the money in the hands of people and they'll use it, and it'll also help the economy go. People have their own money. They can make their own decisions about using it. The concerns we have is everybody's, you know, the withholding tables are based on a pay range and a set of assumptions about exemptions. That's really it. There's a lot of variables that can be different beyond those that can cause tax to go up or down, particularly in light of the new law. So the thing I would caution people about is maybe their withholding isn't adequate this year.
And where it has been historically.
Where it may have historically been adequate. In some cases, in most cases, it's probably going to be fine. But there are going to be people who are going to have surprises this year because their withholding changed and the other changes in the tax law maybe weren't favorable. And so the bias in the withholding tables said, "Oh yeah, they're gonna, you know, their tax is gonna go down, but maybe not."
Would it be as simple as looking at the past couple of years' tax returns and what the withholding amount was, and looking to see if you had to kick in extra or if you got some of your money back and go, "Okay, I mean, if we're kind of in that neighborhood, close enough for right now,
maybe." That would work, and maybe that won't work. And so, you know, great answer in tax planning, maybe. It depends. So, you know, I can throw both those out here. The reality is that if you have been chronically underwithheld in the past, or you have income that's not subject to withholding that comes into your return, those items, you know, and let's consider somebody who has wages and then they've got, I don't know, rental income. Okay. Well, the wages has withholding from it, but the rental income doesn't. Well, you buy the rental and year one, you lose $5,000. Year two, you lose $2,500. Year three, you break even. Year four, you make $5,000. Well, that's a big switch, and you throw $5,000 of additional income on top of your wages, and your withholding may not be adequate now. So it depends on these moving pieces that we have in our lives, and things do change. People do, you know, and that's not an unusual trajectory for somebody to buy a rental and then have things change enough that it does create a loss or break even for a few years, and all of a sudden now you've got income and now you don't have any withholding to cover that income.
Are some of the areas that folks will normally just consume, purchase, do, have those changed with that tax reformation that happened in February? Are there some of those larger events? Buy a new house or buy a different house, relocate, for example. Is that treated differently in this tax year than previous years, or is it primarily just income based?
Potentially it is different. And typically the mortgage interest will continue to be deductible. If you have a borrowed money to buy a house and it's either borrowings to acquire or improve your principal residence, you should be able to deduct those costs, the mortgage interest that you paid. On the other hand, property taxes, there's a cap now on deductible taxes, which is $10,000. So if you're looking and saying, I've got property taxes, I bought a new house, my property taxes went up, but because I've got a relatively high level of state income tax, you could possibly be capped out at $10,000 where you wouldn't have been before, or you might not have been at the old house with lower property taxes. So yeah, there are changes out there. There's also a change in the personal exemption and how that, because you got a higher standard deduction now, but you don't have the personal exemption deduction. So the mechanics are different. And when we looked out ahead, we saw that most people were probably going to be okay with those changes. But that was, we didn't know what their withholding is going to do. So it depends on the withholding. So there's a lot of variables out there, and there's a potential for surprise. So if you...
This is like a half hour kind of a, just kind of do a quick check-in?
Usually takes relatively short amount of time to be able to do that. Depends how complicated your tax situation is.
Oh, sure.
You know, if you get the more complexity you have, the more likely it's going to take more time.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill McCauley. Bill, looking at generals, what kind of rules of thumb would you have right now for folks wanting to avoid that big surprise?
Well, if you have an event that you know is significant and is going to create and change your tax situation one way or another, then that's an obvious trigger. If you have wages or pension that's subject to withholding, you may want to take a look. Take your current pay stub and try to project it out to the end of the year and see where are you relative to maybe how much you had withheld from that particular item last year to see, oh, gee, there's, you know, that's a $2,000 difference. And then you may want to think a little more about, you know, is my tax liability going to be down by that amount when I go to calculate my taxes? It's a little harder to get those tools, you know, but the IRS does have some tools on their website that are available for trying to check your withholding. I haven't used them, but I do know they're out there. The other thing to keep in mind, and we're hearing a new rounds of phone calls from the IRS, and the legitimacy seems greater. You know, the spoofers are getting better at mimicking the IRS. They'll say, oh, call up, you know, go look on the website and then call us back at this number, because and it'll appear that it's the right number, but it really isn't. So the point being, the IRS will not call you to collect. So the IRS will not call you and say you're going to go to jail if you don't give us money, and we would prefer it to be on iTunes cards. You know, I mean, I'm being a little sarcastic, but the point is, we all react emotionally to when we get those kind of calls where, you know, it's something, you know, nobody wants a call from the IRS, or of course, you know, and so these people who are calling, my partner played along with one of them for a while, and then he finally said, "Shame on you. Can you, I can't believe you're doing this." She goes, "I don't care." He says, "Well, what if it was your grandparents?" She goes, "I don't care." That, you know, these people do not care. They do not care about you. They're trying to scare you. Do not respond to them. Do not give them information. Do not give them any personal information, and understand that it is illegitimate and inappropriate, and you do not need to deal with them that way.
It will start in writing.
Do not let someone draw you in based on a telephone call.
Somebody had some fun though in your office.
Yes.
That end game may not have been pleasant.
I have the phone number, and I've been tempted to call it too.
See everybody tomorrow.